The next case on the docket originally, which is number 19-7036, Aaron Ball versus George Washington University, the court will consider it on the briefs. So, Madam Clerk.
Case number 19-1026, United Parcel Service, Inc. Petitioner versus Postal Regulatory Commission. Ms. Sullivan for the petitioner, Mr. Shee for the respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Kathleen Sullivan for UPS. The Postal Accountability and Enforcement Act requires that the Postal Regulatory Commission ensure that competitive products packages collectively cover an appropriate share of the institutional costs of the Postal Service. That's 39 U.S.C. 3633A3. And in doing so, 39 U.S.C. 3633B requires that the Commission shall consider the degree to which any costs are uniquely or disproportionately associated with any competitive products. But the PRC expressly declined to follow that statutory mandate, and that's why we say this order has to be vacated and remanded as contrary to law and arbitrary and capricious. And you don't
not
have to...
Not correct that A2 subsumes B.
They are not correct as a matter of law, Your Honor, and here's why. I would refer
well,
you...
Well, no, actually, the language is sufficiently equivocal. I generally agree with the language is sufficiently equivocal in the statute. I don't have it. So that... If there's a possibility, but it doesn't pan out, I read the statute that says, and then I have to do it. I'm still curious as to whether they're for, can I ask you some preliminary questions? I just need to have an understanding from both sides as to what we're talking about here so I can understand what's really at issue. Am I right in assuming there are inframarginal costs that are indisputably institutional costs? In other words, no one would argue those inframarginal costs are attributable to cost of a competitive project. Is that right?
It's not right, Your Honor. And I think that where we should go is we should go back to this court's prior decision in the A2 docket.
No, wait. Indulge me.
I want to take you to the graph there, Your Honor, to answer your question. If you go to the graph at 890 F3rd, in this court's prior decision on the A2 docket, the docket pertaining to order number 3506, which interpreted the A2. So to answer your question, Your Honor, if you look at the graph that's at page 1060 of your prior opinion, and for ease, Your Honors, it's reprinted in the blue brief at page 30. And I think I can answer your entire question, Judge Edwards, if we look at the graph on page 30. I'm going to give it, Your Honor, this court already considered the question of what costs are attributed to competitive products under A2. Now, let's remember the statutory language under
A2.
That's
not my question. I'm really trying to ask a preliminary question so that I can understand what I know you want to address and the other side want to address. Are there inframarginal costs that are indisputably only institutional costs?
Yes, and they are not attributed to competitive products under A2.
Right.
And
there is no with me. I mean, you know this better than I do because you all have been working with it, but I have to get myself up to speed. So that category is not in dispute here. There, in your mind, everyone's mind, there are no doubt that there are inframarginal costs that can be institutional costs. That's not the issue here.
That is the issue here, because the inframarginal costs that are institutional costs are the very ones that we say the Postal Regulatory Commission was required to consider under A3, and they didn't. And, Your Honor, I think the graph is helpful. If I could kindly refer you to the blue brief at 30. Inframarginal costs occupy the white space of the graph. And I think it's helpful to go back and look at the statutory language. And, Your Honor, your precise question was, why didn't the A2 analysis that this court reviewed in its prior decision subsume the costs that we say need to be considered under A3?
No, I know the court said there are some inframarginal costs
that are attributed and most aren't. And the ones that are attributed under A2 are represented by the green triangle.
There are some inframarginal costs
that are attributed under A2.
And there are some that are not.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The Green.
So there's a question.
Yes.
And that's why I'm asking the question, my first question. Is there such a thing as an inframarginal cost that is properly characterized as an institutional cost, period? Institutional, and you, in your wildest moment, you would not say no, you must attribute that or say it's associated with a competitive product.
Your Honor, there's two different buckets. The attributable costs under A2.
No, I really wish you'd answer this question.
I am answering the question, Your Honor.
No, it may be simplistic, but I really need the answer.
Your Honor, yes, there are indisputably institutional costs.
Inframarginal
institutional costs. That's the white triangle in the graph on page 30. None of those have ever been attributed to competitive products under A2.
And properly so.
No, well, we objected to...
You're not hearing my hypothetical. You're jumping ahead of it. All I want to know, it's a very simple question. It's very simplistic, possibly. Is there such a thing as an inframarginal cost that is purely institutional? No one would say it can be attributed or associated with a competitive project. Is that right or wrong?
That's wrong, Your Honor. We believe that institutional costs must be associated with competitive products under A3. And the A2 says that costs that are reliably, identifiably caused by competitive products are attributed to competitive products under the A2 analysis. That's the blue triangle and the blue rectangle and the green triangle in the graph on page 30.
But not all institutional costs are associated with or attributable to competitive products.
That's correct, Your Honor, but A2 requires that you attribute to competitive products all those that have a reliably identifiable causal relationship with products. That's a very narrow category, Your Honor.
I understand. That's not my question.
The remainder of the inframarginal institutional costs, the institutional costs that are not attributed, so all of the white space in the graph on page 30, part of that must be considered in as it went to the extent it is uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products. And that's what the PRC failed to do. And, Your Honor, I think it's worth looking at the statutory
language.
Sorry,
wait, I need to keep this picture. So you go ahead. I want you to get your questions out. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I went to the other side, too. Mine really is a very simplistic question. I'm trying to see if I can clean out in my mind a certain category of inframarginal costs that neither you nor anyone else would suggest we would ever say, because institutional costs are different from the costs that are clearly either associated with or attributed to competitive products. It's a broader sweep.
Let me give you a simplistic answer. Part of the white triangle is associated with competitive costs. Competitive products,
right.
And part of the white triangle may not be associated with competitive products, but we don't know what portion of the white triangle is associated with competitive products.
The answer to my question is yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's all I wanted to know 10 minutes ago. That's just to help me to sort this through. I'm trying to understand the fight. You're saying some inframarginal costs have improperly been characterized as institutional costs when, in fact, they should have been associated under B.
That was our position the last time.
Okay.
We lost. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we have to win this time is that we lost on the very grounds that the area of the white triangle here was not none of that. The PRC has decided in the current docket that you are reviewing that nothing in the white triangle is uniquely or disproportionately associated with packages. That cannot be true. And why can't that be true, Your Honor? Because remember, we're in the age of e-commerce. Package traffic is rising while mail is dropping. And 30% of the revenues of the post office now come from packages. And that's 30% of the costs that are attributed under A2. Now, Your Honor,
Would you concede there are some institutional costs or some inframarginal costs that are not uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products?
Yes, Your Honor, because the language Congress gave was uniquely or disproportionately associated. There may be some costs that are associated, but not uniquely or disproportionately with packages. There are lots of joint costs that may be associated with both packages and letters. The post office is in the process of buying billions of dollars worth of larger trucks. Why do you need larger trucks consuming more fuel when letter traffic is going way down because of email? Because packages take up a lot of space. So when it buys these larger trucks, you can still carry letters and packages on the trucks, Your Honor, but that cost is disproportionately associated with package delivery. Why? Because the larger trucks and the additional expense to purchase them and fuel them is attributable mostly, disproportionately, to the higher cubic volume of packages compared with letters. Your Honor, I wanted to reserve time for rebuttal, but I've already hit my time. May I keep going? So, Your Honor, I want to be clear that beginning the key to the case, Judge Edwards, why doesn't the A2 analysis subsume the A3 analysis? And the answer is because the A2 analysis did not take into account as attributable to packages the larger trucks that were involved in delivering packages. It didn't take into account other uniquely associated costs uniquely associated with packages. When the post office goes out and it makes a contract with an e-commerce distributor, those transaction costs are all about packages, and yet none of those costs are attributed under A2. What is attributed under A2 and where the Postal Regulatory Commission prevailed in the last case was the extremely narrow set of costs represented by the blue rectangle and the green triangle. Those incremental costs of packages. And the definition
of percentage of, if I understand it correctly, so you've got a nice big area there. I guess it's not quite a triangle, but we'll call it a triangle.
It's a polyhedron with a roughly triangular shape.
Got it. Okay. We'll call it the triangle to save time. Some portion of that white area costs of the competitive products that are not reliably calculable?
Precisely, Your Honor.
Those would not be institutional costs. Those would just be costs, in the statute's terms, its costs, the competitive products costs, but we just can't reliably compute them. And that would be different from things that are not its costs. Institutional costs are not its costs.
Sorry, Your Honor. In this world, institutional here does not have a common sense definition like its common cost. Mm-hmm. Institutional here is the residual of attributed costs. Mm-hmm. Institutional, the white space is by definition institutional costs. Mm-hmm. It isn't all institutional costs because
so
institutional
everything not
fixed
reliably cost. Calculable is an institutional cost.
Well, no.
So
I think it's helpful to go back to the language of the statute because it's the key to my argument. A2 and A3 are not coterminous. So the A2 analysis you approved last time looks, Your Honor, for reliably identified causal relationships. That's 3633A2 plus the definition in 3631B. Costs attributable under A2 must have reliably identified causal relationships. Reliably identified causal relationships have been defined exceedingly narrowly by the PRC, approved by this court in the prior panel decision, as just the incremental cost. The blue rectangle, which represents the cheapest marginal cost of the product, and the green rectangle, which represents the inframarginal costs, Your Honor, that are attributed because they're reliably identifiably caused by the competitive product. That leaves this vast white space.
Right.
And last time the PRC was here, Your Honor, and I commend to your attention, if you do nothing else in this case, listen to the prior oral argument at minute 39, second 11, where the PRC very articulately stated, don't worry if we're undercounting the costs that packages cause the post office under our A2 analysis. Don't worry if the blue rectangle plus the green triangle are too small, because that vast white space, all those costs go into the institutional bucket. And under the A3 docket, which is now before you under order number 4963, the PRC will allocate, and I quote the PRC, reasonable sums that are uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products. And that's what the PRC refused to do. They didn't make good on that promise to this court.
And I did listen to that, so I understand that point. But under B, I want to know on your statutory text, so under 3633B, when it says the sort of money language here, the degree to which any costs are uniquely or disproportionately associated with any competitive products.
Correct.
Does any cost there mean any institutional costs or any attributed and institutional costs.
Both, Your Honor. Any cost means any cost.
I think they agree with that.
And the government may say, oh, well, we took into account some uniquely or disproportionately associated costs over in the A2 analysis because we did account a little bit for trucks over in what we attributed as costs that are reliably identifiably caused by packages. But my argument is that A3 requires more. And the answer to Your Honor...
Wait, I just want to...
Yes.
Well, go ahead. If you're answering him, go ahead. Finish answering him.
Yes, why doesn't A3 subsume? And the answer, Your Honor, to come back to your question, is if we look at the language of B, uniquely or disproportionately associated with any competitive products, and it's any cost, you have to look at the institutional costs. It's not enough to just look at the attributable costs.
Right.
Any cost. There have to be costs over in the white space that are at least disproportionately associated with competitive products.
Because it's residual, the things that they're not accounting for that you say they ought to be accounting for under B are going to be considered by them as institutional costs.
They didn't consider them as institutional costs. That's the whole
point,
Your Honor.
They're in the category of institutional.
They are, Your Honor.
Right. They're in the category of institutional costs.
And if I could just connect us back to the remaining statutory language we need to complete the puzzle, hop up to 3633A3, and let's look at what the Postal Regulatory Commission failed to do. It is supposed to ensure that all competitive products collectively cover what the Commission determines to be an appropriate share of the institutional costs of the Postal Service. And in doing that, Your Honor, down in B, it must consider the degree to which any costs, including institutional costs that weren't attributed over under A2, are uniquely or disproportionately associated.
No, I guess I was emphasizing that language because I thought any costs would include both, I think it's self-evidently institutional here, but also things that were already attributed under A2, and so when it comes down to deciding, I'll just throw this out there for you, because yours seemed to be get whatever you missed under A2, and they say, well, that's nothing. We think we got everything under A2, and I don't know why this language, please tell me, doesn't mean, I don't care if you already counted it under A2. When you come down to determine appropriate share, you got to sit back and look at any unique or disproportional costs, whether they're in the blue box, the green box, or the white box, and you have to factor those into determining appropriate share.
They
didn't do that.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor, 100%. They didn't do that. Any cost means you can't just finish the job by saying, oh, well, we captured a little itty-bitty bit of trucks over in our blue rectangle and our green triangle. They've got to look at the proportion of truck purchases, big truck purchases, or new contracts with e-commerce distributors that were done disproportionately or uniquely because of competitive products.
Whether they're in green, blue, or white.
Whether they're in the green, blue, and white.
I thought you were just talking about white.
We're just talking about white. Here, they have to do
it
under white.
I just asked you whether it mattered. I guess my thought, again, on this statutory language is that I don't care if you already counted it under A2. When you read this, it says, when you're deciding appropriate share, stop and go, hey, is there any cost associated with competitive products that is unique or disproportionate? Whether you counted it under A2 or it was the white area, I don't care. However many things are unique or disproportionately associated with competitive products, you've got to factor that in determining appropriate share.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and that's why we win, because that's what they didn't do.
Okay, but I thought then you said you were arguing about the white box, but you shouldn't. You should be arguing about they didn't get, their argument that we already got unique or disproportionate under A2 is a so what. You have to count. It's a double counting, right? You look again under.
It's actually not a double counting, Your Honor, because remember these are the white space and the blue and green space are residuals of one another. They are mutually exclusive. So our argument is
they're mutually exclusive whether they're called institutional or attributed costs.
Yes.
Right. But what I'm suggesting is that when it says any costs in B, that means any attributed or I'll call them residual costs. Any attributed or residual costs, that's code for institutional costs, though that are unique or disproportionate, those together have to be factored in calculating the appropriate share.
That's correct, Your Honor, but we know that we know that A3 requires the Postal Regulatory Commission to ensure that competitive products collectively cover the appropriate share of the institutional costs. The failure under A3 pertains just to the white space. And maybe the way to put it, Your Honor, is the failure under A3 pertains just to the white space where the PRC decline.
But it could be a part of your appropriate share of institutional costs. Could be, you're an 800-pound gorilla over here when it comes to truck buying. Yeah, you're capturing some of that under attributed, but we're going to stand back and go, even if you're capturing a little bit of it, you're an 800-pound gorilla here, and so as to things that you should carry a little more weight in some sense under institutional costs. That's
yes.
What I'm trying, because the appropriate share is not so much a mechanical calculation, it's a judgment about, you bring factors in, but it's they stand back and they make a judgment about what's appropriate for them to do. And so
that's correct,
it doesn't
Your
matter
Honor.
If they, that's why I call it sort of
Your Honor,
double counting.
Your Honor, let me.
And so a portion anyhow.
Go ahead, answer the judge's question.
Your Honor, we agree with you that any costs that must be factored in covers both buckets, but A3 requires you to ensure that an appropriate share of the white space bucket be
factored. I understand that, but you can factor in.
What I would.
I'm just saying, if these things were reversed, if this were all blue and green and it was only a small amount that was white, you would still say, fine, the fact that they have all these things that are, well, let's assume some percentage of this is unique or disproportionate. We're going to look at the big picture of how unique or disproportionate your costs are in deciding what your appropriate share of institutional costs is.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think we're in agreement, and the PRC failed to do that, and that's why you must remand. And how we know that the PRC failed to do that, Your Honor, is the multiple times in the order. And I would cite you Joint Appendix at 657 as a particularly clear example. Multiple times in the order, the PRC said, at 657, second paragraph, the carryover paragraph, middle, there are no costs uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products that are not already attributed to those products. This is because all costs that are uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products exhibit a reliably identified causal relationship with a specific competitive product group. That simply is false. It cannot be true because reliably identifiable causal relationships produced a very narrow test in the last docket in this court's last order that just gets you to the incremental cost at the right end of the graph, the blue rectangle and the green triangle. Everything else is institutional, and the Postal Regulatory Commission approved an approach that would not consider whether any of the institutional costs in the white space were disproportionately or uniquely associated. That means they leave out the larger trucks.
I do understand what you're saying there. I want to just make sure, but I want to follow it through one more step. As I understand your argument, you've got the attribution under A2, and you're saying, in addition, you have to do B.
A3 plus B.
Plus B. You can still end up with, having done that, let's say they did it to your satisfaction, you can still end up with some inframarginal costs that are not going to be captured either way, and they're just in the institutional category, and they will be subject to the appropriate share formula, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Institutional costs are subject to the appropriate share.
Yes, no doubt about that. I'm just trying to figure out, this is all I was trying to do in the very beginning, whether you agree, there's some inframarginal costs that will be captured neither by 2 nor B.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And they are simply institutional.
Institutional.
And they will be dealt with under 3, A3, the sharing.
Your Honor.
I've dealt with is not the right word.
Yeah.
They are not ignored because in the sharing arrangement, you're considering institutional costs, which would include those inframarginal costs that are not captured by A2 or B.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. So there, in the world, there are two buckets of costs, the A2 costs, which won't capture all of the costs that are associated with competitive products because the test is attributed to. Then there'll be the institutional bucket, and we concede that there might be some portion in that bucket that are disproportionately associated with packages and some inframarginal costs that are not.
See, I'm doing it the other way in my head. I'm doing it. Your argument to me means you've got to do 2 first, and then you do B, and you now have all of those inframarginal costs accounted for the way you think they ought to be accounted for under the statute. Now you go ahead and figure out the appropriate share.
Exactly, Your Honor. But you know what? PRC didn't do B.
No, I understand. I'm trying to figure out what the issue is. Now, the last question I have is, now I understand your argument. What are the examples, your best examples, of inframarginal costs that have slipped through the cracks? I don't want to look at the chart. Just tell me what you're talking about. I like to visualize. What are you talking about specifically?
Your
like
Honor,
what?
Uniquely associated
right.
with competitive products
right.
would be things like the transaction costs of setting up new accounts with e-commerce shippers. They don't send letters. They send packages. Those transaction costs are uniquely associated with packages, but they are neither attributed in the incremental cost A2 analysis that you reviewed the last time, nor were they considered by the PRC under A3. Second example, better example, Your Honor, are larger trucks. I mean, this is very intuitive to me. I hope it is to Your Honor. The post office is out there buying billions of dollars of larger trucks. Why are they doing this? Letters and postcards, old-style mail has been decimated by email and new technology. They should be buying smaller trucks and using less fuel, but instead they're buying bigger trucks and more of them. Why? Because packages take up so much cubic volume. The capital cost of those larger trucks was never attributed, in at least not except potentially in a trivial amount, under the A2 analysis. You're not going to find those big trucks down in the blue rectangle or the associated cost, piggyback cost in the little green
and
triangle.
And they're not captured under B because the agency concedes. We're not even looking there.
Exactly, Your
okay.
Honor. And if they're not
wait,
captured...
Wait, when you say not captured under B, you mean they didn't capture them under B or that the statute B doesn't apply to them?
No, B
must apply to them.
Okay.
Because
right.
they're
I want to make clear because it's...
Yeah. our position, Your Honor...
Not captured under B means they didn't capture them under B.
Right.
Okay.
B plainly under its text requires a consideration of them in the A3 analysis. Why? Because a larger truck is the quintessential...
But they say they don't. It's a truck. They say we've got... cost drivers and our calculations already figure out, look, probably when we send the truck out, it's going to have a bag or two of mail on it as well as all these boxes. And so we've calculated what percentage of the cost of that truck, its size, its gas, its fuel, everything, its maintenance is associated with packages and what's with mail. I'm using mail as a shorthand for the,
yes, Your Honor.
For the non-competitive
stuff. So that's incorrect. That is incorrect. Don't be bedazzled by cost drivers. Cost drivers are just the units of measurement that determine the x-axis. We know that if there are a certain number of cubic unit miles driven to deliver a certain package product, like 3-day delivery of a 3-pound box, the cost drivers just tell you where on the cost curve you're going to attribute the price that creates the blue rectangle. Cost drivers are just a device for determining the incremental cost. It's undisputed
right,
here.
How much, when you say incremental cost, then how much more does it cost us to deliver packages than if we had to drive trucks to deliver mail anyhow?
But that's not what's determined there, Your Honor. Remember, A2 has been interpreted, and I commend this Court's very careful analysis of this in the prior docket. At 890 at page 1057, you will see that there's an extremely narrow definition of what costs can go into the incremental cost analysis that generates what we're calling for shorthand the blue rectangle and the green triangle. And at 1057 of this Court's prior opinion, it shows how narrow the determination is. At 1057, the volume variable cost defined as the marginal cost of the last or cheapest cost driver unit multiplied by the total number of units accrued. So what goes into that analysis, Your Honor, may be a portion of the truck that is reliably, causally identified with that product, and only that product, mm-hmm. but that by definition and design, leaves out all of the incremental cost of the larger trucks that is a common variable cost. The common variable cost of those trucks are over in the white space. They weren't attributed under A2, and they cannot be attributed under A3 because of the PRC's error in B. They didn't do the B analysis. Now, don't take this from me, Your Honor. Take it from the PRC. If you go back to the docket, your review of order number 3506, where you approved the very narrow blue rectangle, green triangle analysis. We opposed it. We lost. They won. They got this very narrow analysis. There, back in that docket, if you look at order number 3506 and you go to Appendix A at page 16, you will see the PRC says that common variable costs mm-hmm. are treated as institutional costs. The trucks we're talking about involve common variable costs. It takes more trucks to deliver more packages. It takes bigger trucks to deliver more packages, more drivers, more fuel. That's a common variable cost that is it reflects the cost of the few letters that are in the truck and the big packages that are in the truck, Your Honor. That was not captured in the A2 analysis by definition and design, because as this court approved the A2 analysis, you never look at the common variable costs because they're in the institutional cost buckets. And that's, Your Honor, why I think it's important to go back to the words of the statute. We know why doesn't A2 subsume A3? The language of the statutes are different. Reliably identified causal relationship is much narrower than uniquely or disproportionately associated with. And second, the PRC's own prior decision on which this court in the prior panel expressly relied. If you go to the prior decision at 1067, it isn't just the representation of counsel at argument. This court accepted at page 1067 that the panel put it is, UPS offers no reason to doubt that the Accountability Act's prohibition on cross-subsidization and requirement that competitive products cover a share of institutional costs will adequately ameliorate any competitive deficit left by the Commission's approach to cost attribution. That was the premise. The premise of the prior decision was A2 captures an exceptionally small sliver of package costs.
But if you increase, another way, make sure I'm understanding your argument, another way to give you the relief that you want is to simply increase the appropriate share of the institutional costs.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but we think...
No matter whether B was effectively employed or not. If you increase it, what is it, 5%? What's the percent now?
The new formula generates 8.8%.
So if you increase it to 14%, you wouldn't be making this argument, right?
Well, Your Honor, if you want to order it increased to 30%, which is right. What we suggested to the PRC, we would bravely accept.
You've got the relief you want.
We would, but, Your Honor,
the other way to address it is you really should have done this under B.
Yes.
The 30%. That's what you, right?
Well, Your Honor.
I'm just trying to make sure I got all the nuances here. That's what you really, there are two ways to capture. If you increase the percentage, it doesn't matter whether you screw up under B.
Your Honor.
Give me a bigger percentage of the institutional costs, because they're in there in the institutional area.
We agree with that, and that's what we said in our comments. We said
at least finally understand.
The institutional cost, Your Honor, if the post office is making 30% of its revenues from packages, and the packages are going up while the letters are going down, and if the A2 process flawed as we thought it was at the time, if that generates 30% of costs being attributed to packages, then doesn't it seem very odd that you would attribute 8.8% of all the rest of the costs of the post office to packages? We think that's very odd, Your Honor. And let's remember,
not if they're really only about 3.4% of the stuff they deliver. I mean, I'm not sure, even if you got the analysis right, that they would have to increase the number or certainly go anywhere near 30%. They can still do the analysis. Probably they have a lot of discretion under appropriate share.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And so as much as I would like to accept Judge Henderson's proposal that you simply order a higher share, we don't ask for that here. We would gladly accept it, but we want to respect the agency's expertise in the first instance to decide the appropriate share. But the one thing that is not within its authority to which you should defer is the ability to nullify A3 and by ignoring B. That you rarely have a case, and here I really do commend the language of the PRC itself on pages JA657 and all the other pages where we say we don't have to do the disproportionately or uniquely associated cost analysis under 3633B at all, because we did it already under 3633A2. We know that cannot be true. It cannot be true because the way they prevailed on 3633A2 in the prior decision of this court was to exclude from A2 analysis many common variable costs, like the cost of larger trucks, that are disproportionately associated with packages, and yet were not considered in the analysis. So the relief we ask for, Your Honor, is vacate and remand, so that institutional share, which is the output, can be calculated in accordance with the statutory requirement that output have the input of uniquely and disproportionately associated institutional costs. And without that input, the output can't be statutorily
correct. Just to clarify my question where I had started before, is even if, let's just imagine in a different world, they had captured all of the, for shorthand, I'll say, reliably attributable costs under A2. Your theory is they got all of the costs attributable to, take out reliably, they got all of the costs, they got the whole graph. All of that is in the A2 number.
Right.
All right? So if let's assume there's, because your argument here is they got this little, on your graph, this little portion over here, there's this big thing, whether it wasn't reliable or institutional or both or whatever, they missed all that. That has to get covered under institutional costs. But imagine everything in that graph actually, through some great mechanical computation by them, got put into A2. The way I read B is that doesn't matter. Or I'm suggesting that this is what B says. B says, I don't care if you already counted for it up there, because some of those things you included in A2 are either uniquely or disproportionately associated, maybe not all of them, but some of them are uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products, like your big trucks. We just wouldn't be buying bigger trucks, or we certainly wouldn't be buying the volume of bigger trucks that we are. And so we need to take that picture, that concern about unique and disproportionate costs that you have, even if you're already paying them, into deciding what your fair share of purely institutional costs, not the things we couldn't get because it wasn't reliable, purely, you know, the postal commissioner's salary. You still should owe a bigger share there, too, because you're doing more up here under A2. Is that wrong?
It's correct, Your Honor, as long as there is any residual institutional cost.
Yes.
So if we take your hypothetical to an extreme, and every single cost that is reliable, under A2 that is associated with trucks, if reliably identifiably caused were broadly interpreted as all costs associated,
including the salary,
then including the salaries, then there'd be very little left in the institutional cost
buckets. I'm sort of dividing, in this question, dividing the world into reliably attributed costs
versus
costs
associated.
That we think go with competitive products, but we can't quite, there's some there that we know go with them, but we can't reliably compute them, and then what we would in lay language call purely institutional costs, but the commissioner's salary, health benefits, these types of things.
So, Your Honor, we believe that if there is any institutional cost remaining after the A2 analysis, even if the triangle, the blue rectangle and the green triangle got bigger and the white spaces shrunk, there still must be, they must perform the B analysis. Here they refuse to follow their statutory mandate to perform
the
B analysis.
The B analysis includes unique and disproportionate costs
of
Disproportionate costs, whether some counted already under A2 or not.
Correct, Your Honor. Even if they were counted already under A2, if there's an institutional cost bucket left, there needs to be a decision of what the appropriate share is that's disproportionately or uniquely associated competitive product costs. Now, I concede, of course, disproportionately and uniquely associated cost of competitive products is an input. The appropriate share analysis still looks at other things, and B still looks at other things, market conditions. But you rarely have such a clear statement by an agency that we simply refused to follow our mandate under B because we assumed that everything was covered under A2, which it could not be as a matter of law given this court's prior decision, because A2 analysis never considers common variable costs like weather trucks that might be disproportionately associated with packages. And because of that, Your Honor, we think this is an easy case for contrary to law and for remands that the agency...
But on that front, you're trying to wrap up. But in that front, this is not quite like other statutes, because they actually, before we get to the language we've been talking about, they have the authority to modify this minimum contribution amount or eliminate it altogether. So wouldn't that allow them to go, look, here's what we think really matters for appropriate share, and that's the competition factors that we've looked at, and they had a few other factors they looked at as well?
No, it does not, Your Honor. So what it is true that the agency could have decided to eliminate the institutional cost minimum contribution requirement. This was enacted a long time ago before package deliveries spiked and the world of e-commerce changed the mail as we know it. And if it had turned out that packages were a bust and nobody sent packages any through the Postal Service, then maybe there would be no need for the A3 analysis. But it can't be when package. It's arbitrary and capricious in an age where package deliveries are 30% of revenues and 30% of attributable costs. It's arbitrary and capricious to say that the costs are the uniquely or disproportionately associated costs are zero. Remember, it's the inexorable zero that is the problem in this case. The PRC said that the A3 number is zero because we did everything under A2. That cannot be right. And the power to eliminate might, if they'd said they were eliminating, then we'd be here saying that was arbitrary and capricious in the current world. But they didn't. They said, oh yes, we considered it and we assumed that we didn't have to calculate it because we already did it. They can't have already done it, and that's the essence of their argument. Judge Henderson, you've been very indulgent. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
All right, we'll give you some.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr.
Sheehan. May it please the Court, Mike Sheehan for the Commission. UPS wants to make it seem like the agency completely ignored in its order some costs that were either disproportionately or uniquely associated with competitive products. That, I cannot emphasize this enough, is simply not true. What the agency actually said is when figuring out what the appropriate share of institutional costs needs to be borne by competitive products, the answer is not to raise the appropriate share like UPS wants. So we heard counsel for UPS say that the only way to do it is to have the percent input equal the percent output, 30% in, 30% out. But if you look at the statutory text of 3633B, that's not at all how the statute works. The statute starts.
Well, I get that you have a lot of discretion, and it's certainly not for the cost allocation approach here at all. But what they're saying is, look, you just missed the boat under B because you said we're not going to look at costs that are unique or disproportionate in B because
that's
we already looked
right.
at them under, we already factored them in under. A2.
That's not correct. There's a difference between looking at a cost mm-hmm. and then setting the appropriate share to take a certain percentage of the cost. So let me just start with this example of trucks, because I think mm-hmm. it's actually very important. Mm-hmm. So I don't think counsel for UPS can contend that the commission never thought about trucks, because everybody knows, as you know, our cost driver example demonstrated, that you know, in order to deliver packages or mail, you need trucks. And so the cost attribution mechanism, the price floors in A2, already take that into account. It's also taken under account
in A1. Are they wrong to say that you only took it into account in the little blue and green and you missed it here?
So I want to be precise about what I mean by taking it into account. Mm-hmm. So the cost of the truck that can be reliably be said to be caused by mm-hmm. a competitive product, mm-hmm. that product has already got to cover that price. That's mm-hmm. right. It is true that under the Commission's cost attribution methodology, we only do what is reliable, and what is reliable is the cost that would disappear if we stopped making that product, right? And so there are some portions of the truck that don't go to that particular competitive product. It doesn't make sense to make that competitive product be set there as a price floor, right? But it's not true that we completely ignored the stuff on the other side. That cost did not disappear from the Commission's analysis. That cost is an institutional cost.
Yeah, it sits in the institutional cost category.
It is.
And it's calculated under A3 is what you're going to argue, right?
It's not just an argument. That is an accurate characterization of what the Commission does. So anything that's not in this green or blue box, and we disagree with their annotations on the court's box, our discussion of this on the red brief at page 51, that gives a more accurate picture of what that graph is meant to do. Anything that's in the green or blue box, a particular competitive product has got to cover in the cost floor. They want you to believe, Your Honor, that everything in the white goes away. And that is simply not true. Everything that is white falls into the category of institutional cost. And so the results of the formulas, 8.8% of that plus, you know, all of the other spaces.
But I think the question is there anything in the white that's uniquely, I think, or just maybe disproportionate would be the word for the trucks, disproportionately associated with packages. Is there anything in the white that's disproportionately associated with competitive products?
I have two answers to that, Your Honor. So first, under the Commission's interpretation of unique and disproportionate, the answer is no, because, you know, construing unique and disproportionate from first principles, the Commission defined those terms in a way that just happens to match what is in the green and the blue, but not the white. But the other more important piece of this answer, Your Honor, and this really is critical, it doesn't matter even if UPS is right about what the word unique means or what the word disproportionate means, right? And this is important because, again, suppose that they're right, that some stuff in the white really does qualify as uniquely associated or disproportionately associated, and the Commission is wrong, mm-hmm. a premise that I do not mean to concede. It's not that what follows then is that the Commission has to, you know, attribute all of that to competitive products as a whole. The appropriate share doesn't need to be that percentage.
I get that it's not that mechanical, but isn't the problem here, if we assume there's something in that wide area that is disproportionately associated with competitive products, like bigger trucks, you just wouldn't need for...
No, Your Honor. And again,
but just assume there's something there. You're doing more big trucks than you would if you were just right. doing first-class mail. I know there's more, but I'm just saying, if you're just doing that, you're doing that. And it's disproportionate. You didn't factor that in. The Commission didn't factor that in determining the appropriate share in this case. Is that correct?
The Commission's formula doesn't require
No, no. Commission said
the Commission
said there's many factors. It's an including, so there's more than what's even listed in the statute. But it says let's look at things like the competitive environment, and you know you got to do at least the including things and things that are uniquely or disproportionately associated with competitive products. You've got to at least look at those, and maybe there's some other things you throw in. So it doesn't mean I'm not at least suggesting in this question that there's any strict formulaic response. It's simply, did the agency do what Congress said and said that your analysis has to include in deciding their appropriate share, you got to factor in things that are disproportionate. Now, the factor could be, yes, they are, but it's so marginally, I don't know if you can have marginally disproportionate, it's just over the disproportionate line, or it's outbalanced by other things, or, yeah, it's there, but the competitive environment, it's not that they couldn't explain it away and even end up in the same number, it's that they just didn't talk about it.
That's not right, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's not right because UPS wants to trade on the intuition that somehow there exists this more stuff, right, that, you know, is not already captured either under A2, which is what UPS spends all of its time talking about, or, you know, here, A1, which is more broader and would include a lot of those other costs. This is the prohibition on cross-subsidization, right? And so let me try to break.
You're changing the floor of the competitive product cost by doing it your way as opposed to their way. In our first case, we said there are some inframarginal costs that are not being captured under 2 with respect to competitive projects. We said that. But the Commission assures us it'll all clean up in the end. I took that to mean that when you get to 3, the percentage would be adjusted.
That's not right.
All right, but forget that. I don't know what the cleanup means unless you go to B and deal with those inframarginal costs. Because if you don't deal with it, we have already said you have not captured all inframarginal costs in the way you do, too, in part because the definition is so narrow. So there are some leftover inframarginal costs. You've just kind of thrown them in the institutional area. So unless you do 3 to their satisfaction, you change the floor on the competitive project cost. The pricing is definitely affected because you've changed the floor. If you found something under B, the floor would change because you would have what you found under 2 and you would add what you found under B.
Yeah, that's right. There's one minor technical detail here, which is B, A3 is the operative language, not B, Your Honor. A3 sets the minimum contribution requirement. That's for all competitive products.
No. I understand
right.
that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is to try and get the cost
right.
for
so,
a
look,
competitive product,
right.
if you leave out something, you've changed the floor, right?
Correct. It is the case that in A2.
Yeah, and if A2 doesn't, in fact, take into account everything, then the floor is wrong.
No, Your Honor. A2, as this Court held, takes into account precisely those costs that can be said to be caused by the production of a product.
I understand.
They disagree with that. But,
No. I think the disagreement is broader than that. They are saying, I thought you were agreeing with me, that if you leave out the analysis under B, as well as acknowledge that our Court has already said you've left out some inframarginal costs in your A2 analysis. You just have, maybe because of the way you define it. So your inframarginal costs are not fully accounted for in your A2 analysis. They're not, and the Court has said that. And they were assured by you that, well, we'll work it all out. Well, they're saying, well, one way you can work it out is do what's required under B. And they're saying you haven't done it. And so the cost for the competitive project, the floor is wrong.
I understand that that's what they say there, Your Honor.
Well, why is it not wrong?
It's wrong. They're incorrect because, and this conflation just flows throughout their briefs and also through the first argument. Again, they're conflating, you know, whether the Commission has considered the costs with whether the appropriate share is set with the percent input and the percent output. Now, that answer, I know, doesn't answer Judge Millett's question, which is, you know, maybe, you know, it's true that percent input doesn't have to equal percent output, and the Commission still needs to think about those costs, and it didn't. And I want to turn back to that question because it's very important. But as to this question, Your Honor, it's very important to remember that nothing in Section A3 mandates the sort of proportional allocation that UPS believes is in the statute. And the word consider simply doesn't mean the appropriate share has got to be whatever costs are uniquely or disproportionately associated as a matter of the statute. And the reason we know that is because Congress said that you can make the minimum contribution requirement zero even if there are a whole bunch of disproportionately associated or uniquely associated costs. So that's why I want to push back against the idea that somehow there is this mandate of 30% in, 30% out that needs to be captured either through A2 or A3, reading B the way they do, or both. Right? That's the premise that I'm disagreeing with. Now, I know that that doesn't get the Commission all the way there, because even if you accept that, it is true that the Commission has got to talk about all of this stuff in its order. And the answer to your question, Judge Millett, is that the other side really wants to parse costs down in the manner that I've just been describing. So the only way you can fairly say that the Commission never thought about this is if you accept that the Commission simply pretended like, you know, some portion of, you know, truck costs don't go into institutional costs at all. And that's just not correct.
No. My question is a different one.
Yeah.
Did the Commission pause to address that some portion of trucks uniquely or probably disproportionately are associated with competitive products when it was trying to figure out what the appropriate share was for competitive products, to get tacked on to competitive products?
No, I get the question.
Right.
So,
and if you can show me where they did that, because I had read your argument, maybe it's my fault, as saying because they had thought everything was covered under A2,
right,
they didn't need to do that under A3/B.
Maybe it would help if I describe
really
it.
Important. Are you changing that? Because that's my assumption, too. That
no, you're right.
Whatever you did under A2 subsumes whatever you might have been required to do under B.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Let me try to describe the Commission's reasoning this way.
Okay.
The Commission started with the text of the statute. What does it mean for a cost to be uniquely associated? What does it mean for a cost to be disproportionately associated? The Commission came up with definitions of those terms. Then the Commission said, we define those terms in a particular way, and it, you know, and I notice some skepticism, so I want to explain this in more detail. Whatever those terms mean, we think we've done a good enough job accounting for it, either because the costs that would fall into those categories are separately baked into the price floors under A2, or, critically, are separately accounted for by the prohibition on cross-subsidization in A1, or both. Now, maybe there might be some cost that...
Wait. You ran through the A1 too quickly.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So
that's just a self-serving conclusion.
A1 is...
What do you mean when
very
you say
important.
That? We've satisfied... I know it's very important.
It, it says...
Satisfied?
A1 prohibits the Postal Service...
Right.
...from subsidizing the costs of its competitive products with money from market-dominant
right.
products. So the way that the Commission tests that is they figure out how much cost is going to go away if the Postal Service just stopped producing every single competitive product that it makes. So I think it makes upwards of 1,000 competitive products or something like that. So suppose the Postal Service gets out of that business entirely. How many costs would go away? And then the Postal Service must then show that all of its competitive products are recovering at least that amount. So if, they're getting back all of the money that it costs to make the competitive products, then the competitive products are definitionally priced in a way that, doesn't have this improper subsidization because otherwise they would be getting back less money. Does that make sense?
I hear you.
Great. So the way that that intersects with this case is that a lot of the costs that UPS is talking about are reflected in this in that calculation under A1. So, for example, again, the question goes back to trucks, right? And, obviously trucks don't just do the delivery of parcels. They also deliver letters and all of that, right?
Well, what about the salary of the – talk about this in terms – I don't want to interrupt it because it's very important for me to understand this. But talk about it instead of in terms of the person who's in charge, who spends some large percentage of their time negotiating contracts with e-commerce companies.
So,
no – I'm going to call it mail. I know some mail is competitive, but we'll call it – not talking about first-class mail here. We're only talking about packages, which you'll say.
Yes.
That's unique. That's only going
and it's,
to
it's accounted for too, right? And
how's
so
that accounted?
The methodology that the Commission uses, like it doesn't
you say
matter
accounted
what,
for. You mean it's already captured under A2 or it's accounted for under B?
Under A1 and A2, Your Honor.
And is it your position that once it's counted under A1 and A2, it doesn't have to be looked at again under B? That's how
no,
I understood the Commission's decision, and that seems to me textually difficult.
I understand why, if that's what you understand the Commission to have said, there would be that difficulty. But I don't think that that's the fairest reading of what the Commission did.
Do you agree any costs in B means both?
Absolutely, both institutional and so. The Commission agrees with it.
Reliably attributed costs and
it's
layperson
all,
institutional costs and not reliably attributed costs.
So the terms are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
The interpretation needs to be totally different. The textual interpretation of those terms that, as explained in the brief and as cited in the order, it's not that we look at this and we say that, these must be equivalent for some sort of purpose. No, it's a statutory interpretation. We look at what the word unique means, what the word disproportionately means, and we say, it turns out these concepts map on. And maybe this delta will help to explain why the Commission hasn't just equated the two. Suppose that UPS were able to identify a cost that is uniquely associated or disproportionately associated that isn't adequately accounted for by the cost methodology in A1 or the cost methodology in A2. In other words, suppose that A1 is very bad and A2 is very bad, and the Commission is in the process of updating those methodologies. So the Commission knows that there's that gap, because A1 and A2 just cannot capture that particular cost. If that were true, right, the Commission would, of course, consider that cost, and nothing in the Commission's interpretation of the statute would prevent the Commission from considering the cost. The problem for UPS is that every single example they
Stop
give...
Stop back. Nothing would prevent it from considering. No, my question is, doesn't the statute require them to consider
it? Oh, exactly. But, and nothing in the Commission's analysis says that they wouldn't, in other words, right? If such a cost
exists... Well, it says they would.
But no such cost exists, and that's the problem
for
UPS.
Okay, there are no... So the Commission's theory is... I had understood the theory to be not that there is no such thing as a unique or disproportionate cost. I had understood it to be that there's no such thing as a unique or disproportionate cost that we haven't already captured the cost of it under A2, and now you say A1 as well. Is that, which is correct, the first or the second?
The second is
second,
correct.
Okay. But then if the statute says, I don't care, if B says, I don't care if you already counted it under A1 or A2, I'm telling you, when you compute the minimum contribution, the appropriate for A3, for purposes of A3, you've got to look again and say, you've got disproportionate and unique costs. Yeah, we already captured that up there, but in deciding what your appropriate share is, we're going to again factor in the fact that at least in one area or two or three areas, you're the 800-pound gorilla. And that's what I didn't see happening here. And so am I just misreading the statute, or am I misreading the commission's decision, and they did do that?
We disagree as to what the commission did.
Okay.
In our view, the commission's decision is best read to do exactly the sort of statutory analysis that Your Honor explained. I know that the other side is giving quotations from the conclusion, right?
Okay.
But there are two questions. The first question is, you know, what are these costs?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, what do we do about these costs?
And did the commission agree
with respect to the appropriation?
Okay, and then the first question, did the commission agree that there are some unique or disproportionate costs associated with competitive products, period?
Yes, of course.
It did,
yeah.
Okay. And where did it say we're considering that in determining their appropriate share? Where in their decision? I must not have read it correctly. Where do they say we're factoring that?
If you'll give me a second, Your Honor,
sure,
I want to locate the portion of the brief where we discuss
this. It's a long decision, I know. Sorry.
So the Commission's discussion of these terms comes at pages 657, 58 of the appendix. And, you know, there are other places where the
commission... 657,
658? 657, 658.
And there are other places. The discussion of how these things are being factored in. So that's talking about the prior decision. 657-58 is just talking about, the heading for that is previous commission decision.
Right. So what the commission did, and so this entire section beginning in 657
mm-hmm.
and going all the way until the end, the statutory analysis
goes
to 667. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is the critical... This section of the commission's order is the critical section of the commission's order.
Right, on this issue, right.
On this issue,
right.
And so
where, I hear them say, here's what our old decision did. So they're saying, but then that's where they say, are not already attributed. Right, on 657 they say, don't worry, we already captured those under A2. Where do they say, but we're looking again under B, to see, you know, should that influence, should be the nature or the volume of these unique disproportionate costs influence their appropriate share? What does it say we looked again under B?
So that goes to the commission's discussion of whether to adopt the 30%, you know, proportional allocation.
Right, but that's not, but my argument isn't that you have to do it, you know, it's not percentage matching here. It's simply that, so where do they look at them and say, we looked at them, and it is factored in, and it gets, you know, 0.05 points or whatever, and it's going to be a big computation that ends up producing a number.
So
where does it come in?
The formula or in their analysis? The way I would explain this is, one, they summarize. So a lot of the commission's rationale was set forth in this initial notice order 4402. The first piece of this, so 657 through 659, summarizes the commission's reasoning in that circumstance and also what commenter said in response. And then at 659,
mm-hmm.
The commission goes to UPS's statutory arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is where UPS says, you know, like A2 and A1 don't deal with costs that are uniquely or disproportionately associated. They say that there's some disjunctive or. So all of UPS's arguments against the statutory interpretation that the commission gave are discussed and rebutted in, you know, that
yeah,
section.
I don't
and
care
the
whether it's narrower
B.
or not. I guess my understanding of the statute is whether it's narrower or not doesn't matter. The fact that you counted it once doesn't mean you ignore it in determining the appropriate share. So where does it say we're factoring it into the appropriate share? This seems to be responding to that first argument, not as to the second. Here's where we are factoring. Now, they could say there are some unique or disproportionate costs, but they're so small, it just doesn't affect the appropriate share. Where does it say that?
So this is 662 to 663. Okay. So now the commission says, so we've explained the statutory interpretation. We've explained why we disagree with UPS's. Mm-hmm. Then it says, disproportionately associated must be broader or it would serve no purpose. Mm-hmm. And then, the commission describes all of the other factors that get to be looked at by the commission, that the commission has to look at in figuring out what share would be appropriate. So the commission explains, for example, in the carryover paragraph at the bottom of 662 and the beginning of 663, that there is considerable discretion given to the commission about what to do, even assuming that there are such costs. And the next paragraph on 663 says, a higher degree of flexibility is inherent in the appropriate share provisions. The relevant factors are set forth, and as noted, there are more than one. Each relevant factor uses flexible language for the commission to interpret, and no specific finding related to a relevant factor would mandate a specific result with regard to the appropriate share level. And then it goes through, from the bottom of 663 all the way to the end of 667. For the relevant factor at issue, UPS focuses on the meaning of disproportionately associated, and responds to all of the textual arguments there. So,
I guess that all seems to be an argument about what the statutory language means. I'm asking for the more practical point of, given our view of what the statutory language means.
Given the
commission's saying, given our view, the commission's view of the statutory language, here's how we factored unique or disproportionate costs into determining the appropriate share. Where does it say that?
So, the commission says, Congress does not...
Which page are you on?
At 663.
Okay.
Congress does not require costs to be found, only for the commission to consider whether any exist. Nothing prevents the commission from concluding that costs uniquely or disproportionately associated are, in fact, captured by the costing methodology it currently employs. And so, if I may, Your Honor, can I just explain why that responds to your question?
Okay.
The premise of your question is that the commission failed to even talk about this alleged missing category.
Just to be clear, before you go on, not talk about, factor it in. Talk about it could be, it doesn't apply. I'm saying it does apply, and where did you factor it in?
I think we mean the same. So
okay.
I think
right,
we're disputing
continue.
The
I'm
meaning
sorry.
Of the word consider.
Mm-hmm.
For the commission to consider one of these unique or disproportionate costs, it does not mean that the commission has to do anything in particular with that cost when it comes to setting the appropriate share requirement. And I guess this is why...
Well, I think we'd have to explain why it thinks that doesn't affect the appropriate share, because this is congressionally identified.
Right. And
they didn't say, we're not doing it here. They didn't make a decision under their authority to modify or eliminate here. So Congress
said... No, they did. They modified the appropriate share. And they used their authority. This was
their
authority to modify.
They didn't modify the statutory rules for what you consider. If you mean modify the appropriate share, it's that they changed it from 5.5 to a formula.
Yes.
We agree on that.
Yes.
But they did not, in doing so, they did not say, we no longer need to consider unique or disproportionate costs.
Of course not, Your Honor. And I guess...
So where do they say... Go ahead. I shouldn't have interrupted you.
I'm sorry,
Your Honor. Explanation for how they factored it in.
I apologize, Your Honor, for being unable to make this quite clear.
It's my density.
I understand the question to be, where does the commission say, in setting what share is appropriate, we are going to set it at this particular number, regardless of whether there might be unique or disproportionate costs that exist that aren't captured in A2 or A1. It's difficult for me to point to an exact citation for that,
But the commission's position was all such costs were captured in the A2 analysis.
Yes, I was accepting that.
That's why the answer is so odd. Your starting premise is that A2 captures whatever B requires.
No, the starting premise is that according to the commission's definition of the language in B, interpretation of that language, either
it's
A1 or A2 captures it.
Right.
Right.
and therefore it shouldn't affect their appropriate share?
Correct. And so I'm trying to explain the therefore piece. And the commission's therefore piece has many different parts. And, you know, with some leave of your honor, I'd like to just go through it. So first, the commission made a lot of very express findings about the relative health of the market and, you know, how the market is incredibly healthy. So the commission pointed out, for example, that the three big players in the parcel delivery market have increased prices at about the same rate. This is at 530 to 531 of the appendix. The commission pointed out that the Postal Service has a huge incentive right now to maximize the prices of its competitive products, regardless of what the price floors are, because it's hemorrhaging money on the market dominant side, and its ability to raise the prices of market dominant products is, as your honor knows, quite capped. This is at 579 to 580. And, you know, the Postal Service has increased prices every year at a rate far exceeding inflation. It's voluntarily exceeded the existing appropriate share requirement every year. There's no evidence that the Postal Service has ever charged less than cost. And there's a complete absence of antitrust actions levied against the Postal Service, right? All of these were factual findings.
Right.
By
they all
the
go to the including as a relevant circumstance, prevailing competitive conditions. It all goes to that.
Right. So then, you know, the commission talks about this other piece, right? So the A1 and A2 and A3, right, and mm-hmm. unique and disproportionate cost. The policy arguments animating UPS's position are that, you know, the Postal Service is this 800-pound gorilla, and so we have got to make them bear, you know, some greater portion than currently exists. In UPS's view, it's unfair that, you know, trucks bought to make some, you know, purchases are not, you know, put into the price floors for those products, right? And the commission rejects that at every turn. The commission says, you know, that there's no empirical support for the idea that there's any sort of relationship between institutional costs on the one hand and, you know, the Postal Service's focus on competitive products on the other hand. And so, you know, for example, they point out that, you know, most of the changes in institutional costs, the increase in institutional costs, are principally linked to factors that are unrelated to competitive products, such as Postal Service pensions, interest rate fluctuations, and other non-operational factors. That's at 675 of the appendix. And so this is where the commission says, you know, we get UPS's view about what ought to be done with uniquely or disproportionately associated costs. We're still not going to adopt UPS's proposed solution.
I get rejecting their solution. I got that. I'm just trying to. I think I understand your position. But so just to be clear, because I think you said their position ultimately was because these costs, in our view, are all captured under A1 and A2. They just don't factor into the appropriate share under B.
No, the appropriate share does not need to be set at a percentage.
No, but they
reflect whatever that number
is. There's more to the world than don't consider it all.
Yes.
And we're not adopting your percentage. There's more they could do. And one is it could be, fine, we're going to factor that into a formula. It'll be some element in our formula. Or it could be we have looked at them and concluded that they are so small relative to everything that's going on here that they don't move the needle. And it sounds like you're saying that's implicit when they talk about all these other things like really institutional costs or healthcare benefits these days. But I don't hear where, I guess I hadn't seen where they said, we've looked at them because the statute tells us to look at them. And we've just concluded that a lot's already captured and whatever isn't captured doesn't warrant any change to our formula. Because.
Yeah. And I hope this answer is seen as answering
seen
because
it
does.
Piecing it all
right.
together.
Piecing it together, the commission did it this way, right? The commission said we get that, you know, in UPS's world, except that there are these more costs beyond mm-hmm. what A1 and A2 capture, right? Mm-hmm. This is indeed UPS's policy proposals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I want to make clear that baked into those proposals is consideration of precisely those types of costs, you know, the white area under the graph, you know, the trucks and all of that, right? So the commission had to think about those costs in the course of assessing UPS's alternative proposals for what the appropriate share ought to be, because those alternative proposals are, you know, essentially dependent completely on, you know, these allegedly omitted costs. In other words, UPS's arguments are...
Right, they had to consider them, but that was simply rejecting their formulaic approach. And that's how I had read it, is, look, you want what they were calling essentially cost allocation. It's a rejected methodology. But that's not the same thing as saying we've done our job of looking at these things and it moves the needle on iota or it doesn't move the needle at all. That's my only point.
It is, Your Honor, because the reasons the commission gave for rejecting that sort of, you know, proposals was not just, you know, we don't think the statute thinks 30% equals 30% or whatever. The commission made a policy judgment, and, you know, examples of this are, you know, throughout the brief when we talk about, you know, proportional allocation and all of that, the citations that are given and, you know, throughout the order, there's a lot of discussion of these proportional type allocations, right? The commission didn't just say we can't do that as a statutory matter. The commission said that as a matter of economic policy, we don't want to do that because we don't think that it makes sense to require products to bear costs like that. Instead, it makes sense to require competitive products to collectively cover, you know, some other percentage set by this formula that reflects a whole bunch of other factors.
Well,
right?
Let me ask you one last thing, please. And Judge Tatel's opinion says marginal costs are not fully captured in the A2 analysis. That was our conclusion. So they're somewhere unaccounted for.
Yes, Your Honor, but I want to be precise about how I answer that question.
You mean some of what you've been doing up to now has not been decided?
No, I just want to continue. This language is incredibly complicated, so I just want to make sure I'm using the exact words. What the court held in the previous UPS case is that for the purposes of the A2 cost floor,
right,
you know, the commission has captured all of the inframarginal cost that a product has cost. It's true that under A2, there are other inframarginal costs that the product cannot be said to have caused, but that might exist, right? And so the answer to your question is the commission didn't say those costs disappear.
Yeah, where are they accounted for?
My
question is simple. Where are they accounted
they
for?
They are all institutional costs, Your Honor. Every single one of those costs that
no,
is
no,
not.
No, I understand. You're right. Saying anything. I mean, we keep going in circles, yeah. But I guess I need to make sure the circle hasn't changed. Anything not captured in two, you're saying.
Is anything that's not a cost attributed.
Yes, I understood that.
Is an institutional cost.
So, yeah, it's an institutional cost. That means you're putting the weight on three. You're saying the answer is going to be in three. We'll do our work nicely there, and so no one should complain. Is that adequate? See, because we've got a problem. The court has said, and this is the part that I hear no answer to, the court said you're not capturing all inframarginal costs under A2 that are there to be captured. You are not doing it, but we hear you, and it'll probably all work out. I honestly thought that what the court probably might have meant was that, you know, there's room under B, and some of those are, and then you gave me a very vague answer, which I don't want you to try and answer it, and I'll go back and look at the materials. You say, well, that's under A1 somewhere. That's how we account for the infram. I'm actually listening to you. You said that's where the inframarginal costs that have not been properly captured under 2, we've accounted for them somehow under A1. I haven't finished studying what you're talking about. And I still don't get it if the statute says you have to look at B. We previously have said under 2, we made a point it's inconsistent with your premise. Everything under A2, you said, everything required under B is captured under A2. We previously held that's not true. We said that your A2 analysis does not capture all inframarginal costs. It doesn't do it. So your starting assumption seems wrong.
No, Your Honor. So first, I want to make clear what the court held in UPS.
I know what the court held. Tell me what your answer is. I know the court held you had not captured all inframarginal costs.
But the court did not hold, and this is the reason I kind of want to push back, Your Honor, the court did not hold that everything is going to get shaken out exclusively in the A3/B bucket. The court's reference to the prohibition on cross-subsidization is exactly the answer that I was giving with respect to A1. So that's just the first piece that I wanted to say. The second, and I guess, you know, more fundamental answer to your question is that Your Honor's question assumes that what the commission did was have three categories of cost, essentially. So there will be costs attributable, then there will be institutional costs, and then there will be this...
Well, the institutional, so that's residual.
Exactly.
I'm worried about the A2 and B.
Right.
Okay.
And so every single cost, everyone that is not attributable under A2, is an institutional cost. That is part of the equation for figuring out what the appropriate share is.
Some of those institutional costs may be B costs.
Some of those institutional costs...
may be B costs.
Could be, but, you know, the court never took a position
on
what those
were. But
we're
now there.
Or whether those are...
B costs, and it will matter whether you account for them. They really are B costs, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We're not disagreeing at all with respect to the structure of the statute. Where we are disagreeing is whether the commission has adequately accounted for them. And, you know, as I've indicated in an answer to you, there are two ways you might think about accounting for, one of which is flatly wrong, and that's the, you know, it needs to be baked into the appropriate share like the other side says it does. The correct way to think about consider to account for is whether the commission adequately discussed it. And for the reasons I've given, you know, we think the commission's order is best interpreted as adequately explaining why, notwithstanding UPS's arguments, you know, accepting the existence of these theoretical costs that are not adequately captured by A2 or A1, it nevertheless makes sense to set the appropriate share where it is.
Because the formula, I mean, their judgment is their share of this stuff that wasn't covered, whatever wasn't covered and gets shipped down to the B,
their fair share
of that is covered by our formula.
The appropriate share,
their,
not the
appropriate
fair
share. Sorry. Yes.
The appropriate
share
of that is
covered by
the formula.
The formula and the factors.
Right, because if it were true that the commission zeroed it all out, right, there wouldn't be any appropriate share requirement at all. It would be 0%. But instead, the commission's formula has resulted in an appropriate share requirement that
would be 0% because of their findings about the competitive market.
If UPS is characterization of the commission's decision were true. Mm-hmm. In other words, the commission ignored all of this. The only stuff that the competitive product has to bear are, you know, the costs of A2 and then, you know, the also satisfy the cross-subsidy mechanic of A1. If that really were what the commission said, and the commission thought that that were adequate under the statute, there would be no appropriate share requirement at all because, after all, it's all captured in A1 or A2. Right. But The point is, it's not that it didn't go, that it went away. The commission created a formula that made the appropriate share requirement go up. The real dispute in this case is that it just didn't go up as much as UPS wanted it to go up. And UPS's statutory argument is that, well, the commission didn't explain itself and, you know, disagree as to whether or not the commission did. But, you know, fundamentally, the commission's explanation is, we hear UPS's arguments about the existence of all of these other costs. But it doesn't matter because given our expert assessment of the prevailing market conditions and given our expert assessment of the economics underlying UPS's proposals, we're not going to do 0%, we're not going to do 30%, we're instead going to adopt a formula that reflects the changing market power and market position of the Postal Service.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's see. Ms. Sullivan doesn't have any time left. All right, why don't you answer any questions we have?
Thank you for your indulgence. Just three quick points. Mr. Shee said that there were uniquely or disproportionately associated costs that the commission did consider, And then we watched as he paged through the order from pages 657 to 676, and there were no such costs. If there were such costs considered, what were they? What were the disproportionate costs of trucks? They're nowhere to be found. Why is that? Because Judge Edwards and Judge Millett, you're exactly right. The commission said on 657, and it said at least a dozen other times throughout the order, the reason we didn't consider any disproportionately or uniquely associated costs under B is because we already did it under A2. But we know from this court's prior opinion that can't be true, because as Judge Edwards correctly pointed out, this court said we were leaving inframarginal costs on the table, but they'll be sorted out in the A3 docket, as Mr. Shi promised us at the last argument. Well, now A3 didn't sort it out. It left the inframarginal costs that might be disproportionately associated with packages, like bigger trucks, on the table. And he says, oh, well, market conditions may take care of that, because A3 is just a judgment call. But market conditions is just one of two statutorily mandated factors in B. You must consider market conditions and disproportionately or uniquely associated costs.
What they say is we've got this formula here.
That was my last point, Your Honor. The formula doesn't do it either. Market conditions doesn't do it. The formula doesn't do it either, because the formula, by the government's admission, has nothing in it. There isn't a single variable there that has anything to do with disproportionately or uniquely associated costs. It's all about market conditions. So if you have no input into the formula from the statutorily required disproportionately or uniquely associated cost factor, the formula can't spit out something that conforms with B. And last, A1 doesn't solve it, Your Honor. I understand Mr. Shi's desire to turn to a different part of the statute than A3 because the commission so flagrantly ignored its obligations under A3 as expressed in B. But A1 doesn't pertain to products that are jointly caused costs between market dominant and competitive products. And most importantly, A1 was not the commission's answer. Do I need to invoke Chenery? If you look at page 657, the commission said we didn't do the A3B analysis because we did it in A2. They didn't say we did it in A1, nor could they. And finally, A1 and A2 together leave on the table, unconsidered by the commission, nearly half the cost of the post office. Two-thirds of truck costs are not attributed to any product. And you're right, Judge Edwards, it does affect the price floor. And the reason the price floor matters is Congress said we enacted this statute to ensure fair competition in the delivery of packages, where there's finally a private competitor to the monopoly the post office held in other domains since Benjamin Franklin. When the Congress said consider fair competition, and the PRC, by its own admission, leaves out a statutorily required factor, that is arbitrary and capricious. And I want to be clear on the narrowness of the remand we request. Mr. Shi was incorrect to suggest that I'm asking you to deliver a proportional different result. We're not asking that. The very narrow thing we ask is send it back to the commission so they can perform their properly required task of deciding, here are the institutional costs, let's find an appropriate share, but to get there, we must have a statutorily required input of looking at the disproportionately associated costs.
You say there has to be something in the formula, or they
no.
just have to talk
they
about it?
They don't have to have a formula at all.
No, they just, but they could they go back and go, we looked at it, and we don't think, for all these, a whole bunch of reasons, that it moves our needle, and we're sticking with the same formula.
If they come out with that outcome, we might be back saying it's arbitrary and capricious, Your Honor, but at a minimum, you need to remand so that they do their job and they perform the B analysis, which they didn't do because they said they'd done it and they can't have done it. So we respectfully request a very narrow remand that send it back to do their job under B. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.